for Cat's Whiskers.
Hi, good evening, and welcome once again to Cat's Whiskers. In previous weeks, we've been discussing where you listen to the programme, and you do listen in some strange places. This week, we'll discuss who listens to the programme. Well, I know Alison Tuffin does from Nottingham, because she's written to us to say she enjoys the programme, but she also says that her teacher listens. Well, Alison's teacher, we don't have your name, but whoever you are, thank you very much. A special good evening to Elaine Hewitt, who's written to us from Preston to say that she really enjoys the programme. And she's also made me a Cat's Whiskers badge, which I'm wearing at the moment. Go and look at your radio. There it is. And she says that she'd like to hear more jokes and riddles on the programme and has sent me a joke book that she'd made herself, from which comes this joke. Knock, knock. Who's there? Ammonia. Ammonia who? Ammonia, little girl, and I can't reach the bell. Bubble. Thank you for that, Elaine. And thank you also to your cat Tiddles, who signed the letter too with a sort of inky purple paw print. But unfortunately, she's now walking around the house with a purple foot. Well, I hope she doesn't make too much of a mess on the carpet. While we were in Glasgow, for our Glasgow's Glasgow competition, you may remember, following the story of St. Mungo, I asked you, where's the tree that never grew? Where's the bird that never flew? Where's the fish that never swam? And where's the bell that never rang? Well, the competition answer we were looking for was on Glasgow's coat of arms. Well done if you got it right. But the Glasgow's Glasgow pokey bags and goodies are going to Ginny Scott, who's 9, from Sandwich in Kent, who's drawn a nice picture of the coat of arms as well. Thank you, Ginny. To Andrew Wilkes from Glasgow, to Tally Morn from Morcott in Rutland, and to Matthew Barraclough, who's also from Glasgow. Tonight on the programme, episode 5 of Charlotte's Web still to come, we also visit the opera in Hackney. We've an environment competition giving you the chance to win your very own mini greenhouse. But before all that, Ace Detective Marlene Marlowe continues to investigate the Puddlethorpe Carnival coup.
Puddlethorpe Police Central Computer, File 1, Licensed Private Detective, License Number 1, BIGTWIT. Marlowe!
Marlene Marlowe. Aunt Maud and I had entered the villainous Ed Banger's mansion and had found a coded letter. But Inspector Millie of the Meter and her man had assumed Ed Banger was an Edwina and that I was she. I had to prove that I was Marlene Marlowe, Puddlethorpe's most prestigious private detective, so that I could prevent the carnival being hijacked.
Stop the jacker, will you?
Spot thinking, Marlene.
I am thinking.
Oh?
I'm thinking I don't want to go to prison.
Oh, Marlene, you complete and utter crime-busting crackpot, you.
Lay into the van with you.
Complete and utter crackpot. That's it! That's it! Inspector Millie, I can prove that this individual is not Ed Banger, notorious villain, but is indeed Marlene Marlowe, Puddlethorpe's most prestigious private detective.
Huh. You can?
You can?
You can?
Oh, Ed Banger is the cleverest, most calculating villain in Puddlethorpe, am I right?
Oui.
Take a good look at the person in front of you, Inspector.
An orange and pink polka dot beach shorts, a t-shirt 10 sizes too large which says Save the Wallies.
Oh, it's meant to be Save the Whales, but I haven't got an H in my printing kit.
A green and violet balaclava in the middle of July, and a pair of sunglasses.
Exactly. Would the cleverest, most calculating villain in Puddlethorpe ever dress in such a stupid way?
No.
But Marlene Marlowe, private detective, would.
Madam, you are right. Who is the prisoner, Sergeant?
Oui, Inspector.
A balaclava.
You see, Marlene, just how useful wearing a balaclava is?
We walked towards the Marlene-mobile. As I turned and put my hand on the car door, I saw something which made me freeze in terror.
Marlene, what on earth is it?
Her face. I've just seen it. Smirking, spotty, leering.
Don't be silly, Marlene. You probably caught sight of yourself in the wing mirror, that's all.
No, the face was up there in the attic window of Ed Banger's mansion.
Then let's go.
Oh, good idea, Auntie. This place scares me, too.
I meant, let's go and investigate the face in the attic window, you spluttering, spineless specimen, you.
Tiptoed up the tiny spiral staircase that led to the attic. With each step we took, there was a dreadful creaking sound. It was Aunt Maud's knees. At the top of the stairs, I pushed hard on the door. It opened. Inside Ed Banger's attic, an awful sight confronted us.
Oh, hello, you two. Have a chucky-wucky.
It was Cheryl Simpkins, Puddlethorpe's carnival queen-elect.
Eddikins has brought me all these sweetie-weeties. Isn't he a little pettikins?
Don't you mean a little pestikins?
Cheryl Simpkins, who'd once been as thin as an oven-ready chip, was now the size of an oven-ready sack of potatoes.
Of course, anyone with an ounce of sense can see what's been going on.
Oh, yes, of course. What has been going on, Auntie?
I've eaten lots of chocolate.
She's eaten the entire contents of Sticker Rock Seaside Sweet Shop, which was stolen by Ed Banger.
But why?
So that Cheryl can no longer fit into the Carnival Queen's dress.
Oh.
And so that Ed's girlfriend, Muriel Murgatroyd, can stand in as this year's Carnival Queen.
Oh.
It's all part of the Carnival coup.
But it's not true. Eddie's bought me all these dresses, see?
Cheryl flung open the doors of a huge wardrobe to reveal
the contents of Hamish McTweed's dress shop.
Oh. Come on, Marlene. We must get these back to poor Hamish quickly. You take the wardrobe.
Oh. What will you take, Auntie?
Me? I'll take it easy.
In no time at all, I was at the bottom of the stairs. Aunt Maud in front of me, Cheryl Simpkins behind me, and the wardrobe on top of me.
Yow!
I picked the wardrobe up. Then I picked myself up. Leaving the sobbing Cheryl Simpkins behind us, Aunt Maud and I made our way in the Marlene Mobile to Hamish McTweed's fancy dress shop.
Every one of my dresses. My Batman suit. My Indiana Jones costume.
Oh, yes. And look at this one with the beak, the ears and the flat feet. That must be your Count Duckula costume.
No, that's my Michael Jackson costume. But look, it's no good everyone trying to enter the Carnival Fancy Dress Parade if Ed Banger's still at large. He'll still stop everyone from taking part.
He must be stopped. Marlene, have you still got that coded letter?
Yes. It says, you will find me 100 metres out at the third letter. In other words, rearrange ripe. If you've still not found me, look hard. I am at the end of it.
The third letter. What's the third letter of the alphabet?
C.
100 metres out at C. Now, rearrange ripe.
Erip.
Peer.
Look hard.
Squint.
Peer again.
And I am on the end of it.
Are you, Hamish?
No, I am not. But Ed Banger is. He's 100 metres out at sea on the end of the pier.
Right. Come on. The carnival's due to start in 3 hours.
Hang on, Marlene. We can't all go. Somebody ought to stay and help Hamish sort out his fancy dress costumes.
Oh, how kind.
Tell you what, we'll draw lots. Guess what hand Hamish's thimble is in. If you guess right, I have to stay and help Hamish. If you guess wrong, you have to go and catch Ed Banger and his gang.
Right, Auntie.
Half an hour later, I found myself on the end of the Puddlethorpe Pier. The only building on the end of the pier was the theatre. I went in. A wrestling match was about to begin.
Ladies and gentlemen!
I recognised the MC immediately. It was Ed Banger.
In the red corner! The biggest, most bruising, bloodthirstiest wrestler of all time, Barry Bone Crusher Bates!
Barry Bates' face spread into a wide, wicked grin as he twanged the ropes at the side of the ring. Suddenly, Ed Banger looked my way, and his face spread into a wide, wicked grin too.
A newcomer to the ring, the Balaclava and Beanpole herself, Marlene, the Midget Marlowe!
Two bouncers lifted hold of me and tossed me into the ring. I slumped against the corner ropes, staring up into the cold, hard eyes of Ed Banger.
Ah, Miss Marlowe, so glad you could make it. Now shake hands with Bone Crusher here.
Pleased to meet you, Miss Marlene. Shall I beat her to a pulp, boss?
Yes, but wait for the bell first, Barry.
How could I hope to get out of the ring without being wrestled to pieces by Barry Bates? I had to think of something quick. Otherwise, the career of Marlene Marlowe, private detective, would be suffering a crushing defeat.
Oh no, how will Marlene get out of a wrestling bout with Bonecrusher Bates? And if she does, is there still time for her to stop Ed Banger from hijacking the carnival? All will be revealed in next week's final episode.
This week, Cat's Whiskers goes to the opera, a young people's opera dealing with environmental issues. It's called A Safe Place, and we've come to Stoke Newington School in Clissold Park in North London to talk to the composer, Stephen Endelman, and Emma Bunnell, who plays a character called Mandy.
Tell me what A Safe Place is about.
It's an environmental opera. It's about green issues, which... It's about a school built on a toxic waste dump. And a lot of the kids get ill, but nothing's really done until one of them dies. A lot of the kids get angry and decide to rebel against it. They take various plans of action. Some of them go down into the basement and hide overnight, so their parents will have to call the police. It actually turns out that the chairman of the governors is also the chair of the council. His grandfather was the owner of the company that dumped the toxic waste, and he's known about it all along.
Without giving too much away, is it a happy ending?
It's a happy ending, yes. It's a positive ending.
And what are you like on first nights? Do you get nervous?
Yes. Terrified.
The air is sour, it should be sweet. Tender in here, sour. The air is sour, it should be sweet. Tender in here, sour. The air is sour, it should be sweet.
Stephen, tell me how the project came about.
I wanted to create a whole music and education project built around a single piece of opera, music theatre. As well as, obviously, the 43 children on stage, there are also 550 children building models in the classroom based on themes coming from the opera, environmental science, environmental design. And what we decided to do, what I wanted to do, was create a performance for those children as well. So all their work will be exhibited alongside the performances and in all the venues that we'll be visiting.
The issues that you're dealing with are very 1990s and onwards, but you've chosen a medium that is perhaps fairly antiquated. Opera is all sort of la 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 and all love and passion and not right on environment stuff. Why opera?
It's a medium which I have worked on for a number of years, and I love the medium of opera, and opera in 1990 should be about 20th century issues, and the environment and the content of the story is something I'm very close to, so I decided to set it within that structure, where we have choruses, we have arias, we have duets, a quartet, and even a ballet sequence. But all of it lends itself, the story lends itself to that medium. It deals with heightened emotion, it deals with people changing things, and opera works, can work, and can be used in that way. I think children, young people, especially living in inner city, within the inner city, are aware of the environmental problems that exist around them. You know, go and stand in the back wall of the Blackwall Tunnel and you'll know about it.
Please pass over us.
A Safe Place had its first performance last night at the Queen Elizabeth Hall in London's South Bank and will also play various other venues, including the Hackney Empire and the Broadgate Arena. Staying with the environment, we thought it might be nice to have an environment-friendly competition on Cat's Whiskers this week, giving you the chance to win one of these. It's a mini greenhouse. You can grow things on your own bedroom windowsill, and inside there's a book called The Garden Book, and it'll tell you how to germinate seeds, transplant seedlings, and, this is the most interesting bit, how to grow a cucumber in a bottle. If you'd like to win a mini greenhouse, a very simple two-part competition question to answer: what are CFCs, and what are they doing to our environment? What are CFCs and what are they doing to our environment? Answers, please, to the usual Cat's Whiskers address, which comes up at the end of the programme. A special request this week for the Pulitzer from Heather Graham, who lives on Wirral in Merseyside. She says, I'm learning to play the recorder because I like playing tunes, and when I grow up, I want to play the flute. So please, can you put flute into the Pulitzer? Well, Heather, no sooner requested than done. F-L-U-T-E. Cat's Whiskers club members celebrating a birthday this week are David Lomax, Thomas Pomfret, Amy Smith, Emily Matthews, Kiran Kamath, Ruth Dalton, Hannah Moss, Gillian Goodman, Lucy Gillam and Ellen Coomber, Zaid Al-Jamil, Caroline Weston, Anna Mature, Andrew Ward, Christopher Martin, Elizabeth Webb and Simon Howard. Happy birthday also to Neil Rose, Vivian Pugh, Heidi Snape, Jonathan Rowett, Stephen Gammon, Chloe Williams, Catherine Brewer and John Aston. David Clapham has a birthday this week, as does Lindsay Forrester, Richard Holt, Martin Robson, Rachel Kemp, Alex Joe Dawson, Francis Nichols and Catherine Redmond. Lucy Humby is celebrating this week. So are Lisa Coates, Mark Shaw, Joseph Prestige, Jessica Harrison, Astrid Kingscott, Sarah Hunt, June Atkinson, P. Wilcock, Jonathan Bramall, Robin Bourne and Marianne Barnes. A very happy birthday to all of you from all of us on Cat's Whiskers. And I hope you enjoyed that nice piece of music, Heather. Time now, though, to find out who's won the T-shirt, so we'll push the Pulitzer again. One, four, seven, seven, zero, eight. 147708, the membership number of Stephen Gammon, celebrating his 8th birthday on Tuesday the 12th of June. So happy birthday to you, Stephen. There'll be a Cat's Whiskers T-shirt in the post to you very shortly. You share your birthday with the President of the United States, Mr. George Bush, and Sophie Lawrence, who plays Diane Butcher in EastEnders, and also celebrating this week, the tennis player Steffi Graf. Now on Cat's Whiskers, it's episode 5 of our story, Charlotte's Web.
Crickets sang the sad, monotonous song of summer's ending. Summer is dying, dying, they sang, summer is dying. Everybody heard their song. Fern and Avery heard it and knew that school would soon begin again. The young geese heard it and knew that they would never be little goslings again. Lurvy heard it and knew it was time to dig potatoes. Charlotte heard it and knew that she hadn't much time left. Wilbur was now the center of attention on the farm. Good food and regular hours were showing results. He still sometimes worried about the future. One morning, he asked Charlotte about the fair.
"You're going with me, aren't you, Charlotte?" he asked.
"Well, I don't know," replied Charlotte. "The fair comes at a bad time for me."
"Oh, please come with me," begged Wilbur. "I need you, Charlotte."
"No," said Charlotte. "I'd better stay home and get some work done."
"What kind of work?" asked Wilbur.
"Egg laying. It's time I made an egg sack and filled it with eggs."
"I didn't know you could lay eggs," said Wilbur in amazement.
Why didn't you come and lay your eggs at the fair? You don't know the first thing about egg-laying, Wilbur, said Charlotte. However, I don't want you to worry. Let's say that I'll come to the fair if I possibly can.
Oh, good, said Wilbur. I knew you wouldn't forsake me.
On the morning of the county fair, everyone got up at daylight. Lurvy put clean straw into Wilbur's crate and lifted it into the pig pen. The crate was green, and its gold letters said, Zuckerman's Famous Pig. Wilbur ate his breakfast slowly and tried not to get food in his ears. In the kitchen, Mrs. Zuckerman suddenly made an announcement. Homer, she said to her husband, I'm going to give that pig a buttermilk bath. A what? Said Mr. Zuckerman. My grandmother used to bathe her pig in buttermilk when it got dirty. But Wilbur's not dirty, said Mr. Zuckerman. He's dirty and he's going to have a bath, said his wife and went to the woodshed. When she returned, she carried a bucket of buttermilk and a small wooden paddle. Edith, you're crazy, mumbled Mr. Zuckerman. But she paid no attention to him. Together they walked to the pig pen. Mrs. Zuckerman climbed in with Wilbur and went to work, rubbing him all over with buttermilk. Wilbur stood still and closed his eyes. He felt radiant and happy. When Mrs. Zuckerman had finished, he was the cleanest, prettiest pig you ever saw. The seven goslings paraded round and round their mother.
Please, 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 take us to the fair, they piped.
Children, snapped the goose, we're staying quietly, idly, idly at home. Only Wilbur, Wilbur, Wilbur is going to the fair.
Just then, Charlotte interrupted. I've decided to go, too, she said softly. Wilbur may need me, and I think Templeton better come as well. I might need somebody to run errands.
I'm staying right here, grumbled the rat. I haven't the slightest interest in fairs.
That's because you've never been to one, remarked the old sheep. A fair is a rat's paradise. Everybody drops food at a fair. A rat can creep out late at night and have a feast. Old peanut butter sandwiches, slices of hard-boiled egg, biscuit crumbs, particles of cheese, bits of donuts, popcorn fragments, dropped toffee apples, salted almonds, ice cream cones.
That's enough, cried Templeton. I'm going.
And he scampered over to the crate and crawled between the slats and hid under the straw. Right, said Charlotte, winking at the old sheep. I'm next. She let out a drag line, dropped gently onto the crate, and concealed herself in a knothole. Mr. Arable slowly reversed the big truck toward the pig pen. Lurvy and Mr. Zuckerman walked alongside. Fern and Avery were standing in the back.
Wilbur, whispered the old sheep. When they try to put you in the crate, struggle. Pigs always resist when they're being loaded.
Templeton poked his head through the straw.
Struggle if you must, he said, but kindly remember I'm hiding down here and I don't want to be stepped on or kicked in the face or crushed or biffed. Just watch what you're doing, Mr. Radiant, when they're shoving you in.
Mr. Arable stopped the truck and walked round to the rear and lowered the tailgate.
Yep, he's a wonderful pig, said Mr. Arable. Yeah, you'll get some extra good ham and bacon from that pig, Homer.
Wilbur's heart almost stopped.
Oh, I think I'm going to faint, he whispered to the old sheep. Kneel down, she whispered. Let the blood rush to your head.
Wilbur sank to his knees. All radiance had gone. He closed his eyes.
Look, screamed Fern. He's fading away. Hey, watch me, yelled Avery, crawling on all fours into the crate. I'm a pig! I'm a pig!
Avery, you get out of that crate this instant, commanded his mother.
I'm a pig! Cried Avery, tossing handfuls of straw into the air. oink, oink, oink. The truck is rolling away, Papa, said Fern. The truck started to roll downhill. Mr. Arable dashed to the driver's seat and pulled on the handbrake. The truck stopped. The geese cheered. Charlotte crouched and made herself as small as possible so Avery wouldn't see her. Come out at once, cried Mrs. Arable. Avery crawled out of the crate, making faces at Wilbur. Wilbur fainted away. The pig's passed out, said Mrs. Zuckerman. Throw water on him. Throw buttermilk, suggested Avery. The geese cheered. It's sunstroke, said Zuckerman. Heat's too much for him. Maybe he's dead, said Avery. Come out of that pig pen immediately, cried Mrs. Arable. Avery obeyed his mother and climbed into the back of the truck. Lurvy returned with cold water and dashed it on Wilbur. Throw some on me, cried Avery. I'm hot, too. Oh, keep quiet, shouted Fern, her eyes brimming with tears. Wilbur came round and rose slowly to his feet while the geese cheered. He's up, said Mr. Arable. I guess there's nothing wrong with him. Oh, I'm hungry, said Avery. I want a toffee apple. Mr. Zuckerman and Mr. Arable and Lurvy grabbed the pig and pushed him headfirst toward the crate. Wilbur began to struggle. The harder the men pushed, the harder he held back. Avery jumped down and joined the men. Nothing wrong with this pig, said Mr. Zuckerman cheerfully. All together now, boys. Shove! With a final heave, they jammed Wilbur into the crate. The geese cheered. Lurvy nailed up the door, and the men heaved the crate aboard the truck. Everybody in, called Mr. Arable. The ladies climbed in beside him, whilst Mr. Zuckerman, Lurvy, Fern, and Avery rode in the back with Wilbur. The truck began to move off. The geese cheered. The children answered their cheer, and away they all went to the fair.
And you can hear episode 6 of Charlotte's Web next week, along with Marlene Marlowe concluding her investigation into the Puddlethorpe Carnival coup, and myself visiting Old Trafford to go behind the scenes at Lancashire County Cricket Club. So until next Sunday, do have a good week. Bye-bye.
Cat's Whiskers address is BBC, P.O. Box 40, Manchester M60 1FR. Cat's Whiskers was presented by Andy Crane. The Marlene Marlowe investigation was written by Roy Apps. Kit Hollerbach read Charlotte's Web by E.B. White, which was adapted by Mick Greenway. Cat's Whiskers was produced in Manchester by Mary Callum-Kerrion and Ev Draper. This is Radio...